Okay, picture this. When you were a kid, some people wanted to be astronauts and some wanted to be astrophysicists. The astronaut flies the mission. The astrophysicist builds the map of space so the mission makes sense. That is the distinction here. AI is the most powerful telescope ever built, but a telescope without a map just points wherever someone aims it.
Five things. Why five people can look at Tesla and see five completely different companies. What the framework actually measures and why eight dimensions matters. The astrophysicist analogy and what it means to build with AI rather than on it. Why half of this research lives in files a computer can read but a book cannot contain. And what you can actually try yourself.
So, welcome to today's deep dive. I'm so excited about this one because it's going to feel, I don't know, just like sitting down with a smart friend over coffee. We are really pulling back the curtain today on how AI, brand perception, and like organizational design actually intersect when you finally stop guessing and start measuring.
Yeah, and it's a massive shift in how we think about this stuff.
Right. And we're going straight into a problem that honestly, you listening to us have definitely experienced, even if you didn't quite realize it. So let's talk about Tesla for a second.
Okay, Tesla, always a safe, non-controversial topic,
Oh,
right?
totally. But like, if you gather five different people and just ask them to look at Tesla, they will literally describe five completely different companies to you.
Absolutely.
Like one person looks at it and they see the inevitable future of transportation, you know, clean energy saving the world. But then another person looks at the exact same company and sees basically an overpriced tech toy that has panel gaps.
Right, the build quality issues.
Yeah, exactly. And then a third person looks at it and sees a walking political statement. But it's the same cars, right? The same factories, the same CEO. And yet you get five totally different realities.
You do. And the thing is, the traditional reaction in the business world is to treat that scenario as this like massive communication failure.
Oh, interesting. Like it's their fault for not being clear.
Exactly. You have these executives sitting in boardrooms and they think, well, our messaging simply isn't clear enough. We need to unify the message. But the research we are diving into today argues the exact opposite.
Wait, really?
Yeah. It says this isn't a communication failure at all. It is
Stop.
literally just the physics of how human perception works. People naturally notice different things
Yeah.
because, I mean, they bring different prior experiences, different personal values, different sensitivities to the table when they look at anything.
That makes sense. We all have our own baggage, basically.
Right. Yet historically, the whole industry has treated all of this messy complexity by just flattening it into an average.
What do you mean by flattening it?
Well, they survey 1,000 people, average out the responses, and then they give the brand this single unified brand health score.
Okay, let me challenge that right out of the gate, though.
Yeah.
Because if everyone sees something completely different, how do we avoid just throwing our hands up?
Right, the chaos factor.
Yeah. I mean, aren't we just navigating without a map if we try to cater to five different, completely subjective realities at the exact same time?
So that tension right there is exactly what the first major piece of this research solves. It's called spectral brand theory.
Spectral brand theory. Got it.
And instead of just throwing our hands up or relying on one single flattened score, this framework measures brand perception across eight independent dimensions.
Eight dimensions.
Yeah, think of them like different frequencies of light. If you take white light and you run it through a prism,
It splits into a rainbow, the
yeah,
spectrum.
exactly. It splits into a spectrum. And spectral brand theory basically does that exact same thing to human perception.
Okay, so let's ground those dimensions a bit. How does that prism actually spit the light for a company like, well, like Tesla?
Sure. So we can look at just three of the eight dimensions to sort of see the mechanism in action. You have the ideological dimension, which measures what values the brand is signaling.
Right.
For Tesla, one consumer might score them a 10 out of 10 on that because they honestly perceive the brand as saving the planet.
The clean energy angle.
Exactly. But then you have the experiential dimension, which is how the product actually feels to use in your hands.
Oh, okay.
And that exact same consumer might score them a 2 out of 10 on experiential because, you know, maybe the touchscreen interface feels distracting while driving or the suspension is super stiff.
Yeah, that's a huge difference. 10 to 2.
Right. And then there's the economic dimension, which is what it costs versus the perceived value of what you're getting.
Wow. Okay, so when you lay it out like that, the danger of that traditional brand health score becomes, I mean, glaringly obvious.
How so?
Because if a brand is a 10 on ideological but a 2 on experiential, and you just average them together, you get a 6.
Exactly.
But a six tells you absolutely nothing about the actual business. It's like averaging the temperature of an oven and a freezer and concluding that your kitchen is perfectly comfortable.
That is a perfect analogy. The single score mathematically erases the structure of what's actually happening underneath.
It just hides all the real problems.
It erases the most actionable data you have. And the other dimensions in the framework complete that whole map. So, along with ideological, experiential, and economic, you have the semiotic dimension.
Which is what, like logos and stuff?
Yeah, how things look and sound. Yeah. Then there's a narrative, the story they tell. Social, meaning who else is buying this product.
Keeping up with the Joneses.
Precisely. Cultural, which is the aesthetic codes it belongs to. And temporal, which is its heritage, or like how long it has been around.
Okay, that's a lot.
It is. But the crucial thing is, knowing a brand's score on any one of these tells you absolutely nothing about its score on another. They are entirely independent variables.
Okay, so we have these eight dimensions. But knowing the dimensions is really only half the battle, right? Like, how do you actually group the people who are looking at these dimensions?
What do you mean?
Well, if I'm running a business, traditional demographics like age or income or zip code, they don't seem to map neatly to these highly specific perceptual frequencies.
Oh, they don't map at all. They fail completely.
Really?
Completely?
Yeah. I mean, think about it. A 25-year-old barista and a 60-year-old accountant might have identical sensitivities to a brand's ideological and experiential signals.
Okay, yeah, I can see that.
So this research introduces a mechanism to solve that exact problem. It's called the observer cohort.
The observer cohort.
Right. An observer cohort is basically a group of people who notice and weight the exact same things completely regardless of their demographic background.
So it doesn't matter how old they are or how much money they make?
Not at all. It is entirely about how their perceptual apparatus operates, not who they are on paper.
Okay, to put that into a real-world context for you listening, it's like, imagine two diners sitting at the exact same restaurant.
Right.
They're eating the exact same food, sitting in the same chairs, listening to the same ambient music in the background. And one says it's the best meal of the year, while the other says it's overpriced and cold.
Yes.
Both are technically right. They're just tuned to different channels.
Like, yeah, yeah.
The first diner might be heavily weighting the social and cultural dimensions. They just love being seen at the trendy spot.
Exactly.
They care about the vibe.
Yeah. But the second diner is heavily weighting the experiential and economic dimensions. Like, the food was physically lukewarm and the bill was too high.
Right. And building on your diner example, once you actually map out that the people outside your business are tuning into these different channels, the immediate operational crisis becomes, well, how do you design the inside of your business to reliably broadcast on those specific channels?
Oh, wow. So tying the outside perception to the inside operations.
Yes. And that brings in the second major framework here, organizational schema theory. If spectral brand theory maps the outside perception, organizational schema theory specifies the inside operations. But, and this is key, it does it backward.
Backward meaning starting from the customer's brain and working all the way back into the supply chain.
Exactly.
Let me play the skeptic here for a second, though. If I have to reverse engineer my entire business from the exact perception of an observer cohort, isn't that just a recipe for micromanaging my staff to death?
It sounds like it would be.
Yeah. I mean, how do you scale that without creating an absolute bureaucratic nightmare?
You avoid micromanaging the people by specifying the physics of the process instead.
The physics of the process.
Yeah. See, most organizations are designed forward, starting from whatever resources they happen to have. But organizational schema theory says, here is exactly what must be true at every step, written precisely enough to test.
Okay, give me an example.
Think about a coffee shop. The framework uses this open source example called Spectra Coffee. The customer experience goal, which is the very top level of the specification, might be something like, the espresso is balanced with a sweet, clean finish.
Okay, so that addresses the experiential dimension for a specific observer cohort.
It does. And the schema then works backward mathematically from that goal.
Mathematically? How so?
It asks, what operational physics must be true to achieve that exact experiential dimension? So the specification dictates things like the water must be exactly 200 degrees.
Wow.
The extraction must yield 36 grams of liquid in exactly 28 seconds. The beans must meet a highly specific sourcing requirement.
So it's leaving nothing to chance.
Nothing. If a step in your business process doesn't trace all the way up to a specific customer experience goal, it is operational waste, period. It is a precise, testable chain of causality.
So, okay, picture this in your mind.
Okay.
On your left, you have an astronaut in a spacesuit. They are executing, they're moving, performing the mission. Mm-hmm. And on your right, you have a scientist sitting at a desk covered in coordinate charts, mapping the positions of the stars to build the framework that makes navigation possible in the first place.
Yes.
And between them is this massive telescope pointing at a star map.
That visual perfectly captures the essence of this researcher's entire approach.
Really?
Yeah, because the researcher behind this work doesn't run branding campaigns. He doesn't fly the missions.
He's the astrophysicist.
Exactly. He builds the map of the space so he understands the physics of it. A telescope without a map just points wherever someone aims it. AI is the telescope. The map is what this research is.
Man. Because everyone in the business world right now is loudly bragging about building their companies on AI.
Yeah. The buzzword of the decade.
Totally. But looking at this framework, building on AI seems like a massive structural risk.
It is a profound risk. Building on AI means you are basically asking the machine to do the thinking and the structuring for you. And the danger there is that AI is fundamentally an accelerant. Its speed simply amplifies whatever direction you are already pointing.
So if you're pointing the wrong way.
Exactly. If you have no underlying map of your observer cohorts and you just build on AI, you're just running incredibly fast in potentially the wrong directions, generating noise.
You're literally strapping a rocket engine to a bicycle that's pointed at a cliff.
That is exactly it. Building with AI means you supply the theory and use it as the instrument. Building on AI means asking it to do the thinking.
Right.
Building with AI means you supply the robust theory, the mathematical structure, and the map. You use AI as an instrument to hold an architecture that is simply too complex for human working memory to manage alone.
Because the scale of the map we are discussing today is staggering, right? Which is why AI is necessary to hold it.
It's massive.
We were talking about 20-plus research papers hosted on Zenodo. And to be clear for you listening, these are preprints currently under journal review, so they're not yet peer-reviewed.
Yeah.
But within those papers are 10 mathematical foundations and 7 validators, all kept perfectly consistent. How does an AI actually use a mathematical foundation in this context? Because we aren't just talking about generating marketing copy here.
No, not at all. We are talking about defining human perception as a literal vector space.
Okay, break that down for me.
Let's take the temporal dimension, which is how a brand signals its heritage or its longevity. To measure this, the AI doesn't just, you know, guess or hallucinate an answer.
Because that's what AI usually does if left alone.
Right. Instead, the mathematical foundation prompts the AI with specific coordinate boundaries. It instructs the AI to analyze the brand's language and operational footprint for specific signals of tradition, historical anchors, or sustained market presence.
Wow.
And then it maps those signals on a rigid 0-to-1 continuum.
And the 7 validators, those act as the guardrails for that mapping.
Exactly. They serve as cross-checks to prevent the AI from hallucinating a reality that doesn't actually exist.
How does a validator do that?
Well, one validator might ensure that the economic dimension the AI calculates doesn't logically contradict the social dimension.
Oh, I see.
Right. So if the math shows a massive discrepancy, like a hyper luxury price point, but a completely mass market social signal, the validator flags the anomaly. The AI is the telescope doing the scanning, but the human researcher provides the coordinate system and the gravitational laws.
Okay. This introduces a really fascinating logistical problem, though.
Yeah.
Because if the bulk of this research, like these complex operational schemas, the mathematical rules for the AI, the tracing of water temperature to brand experience, if all of that lives in what developers call YAML files, how do you even publish that?
That's a great question.
Because YAML is basically code. It stands for yet another markup language.
Yeah.
It is used to structure data so machines can read it natively. You can't just print a directory of conditional code rules and call it a book.
No, you can't. In fact, a traditional book would actually destroy the utility of the research.
Destroy it? How?
The researcher describes this process as collapsing.
Collapsing.
Yeah. If you try to take a multidimensional executable machine specification, like a YAML file, and you flatten it into paragraphs of text that only humans can read, it loses all its executable power. It becomes frozen in time.
Oh, it is exactly like a company's profit and loss statement.
Exactly.
Right, because a P&L gives you the collapsed, frozen numbers on a page. But the actual truth of the business, The 200,000 individual transactions, the atoms of the operation, they're gone.
They're completely erased. Let's follow that P&L analogy all the way down, actually.
Okay.
Think about those 200,000 transactions. If one of those transactions is a customer returning a jacket and complaining about a broken zipper, the collapsed P&L just shows a negative $5 refund in a spreadsheet.
Right, just a number.
The context is dead. The YAML specification, however, keeps that zipper complaint alive as a data point.
So it doesn't lose the detail.
Exactly. The AI can read that specification, trace the zipper complaint backward through the operational schema, and flag a systemic supply chain failure at the vendor level.
Oh, wow.
You cannot reconstruct a business from a collapsed P&L, and you cannot execute a dynamic strategy from a collapsed book. Every report, every brand score, every book is a collapsed version of a richer specification. His work is about building the specification.
That makes so much sense.
Yeah.
So the solution proposed for publishing this is a dual medium format.
Right.
You have the human text for humans, which explains the concepts, the case studies, and the underlying philosophy. But then connected directly to that text via traceability links, you have the machine specifications hosted in a code repository for the AI.
Exactly. It is the exact same source of truth, just formatted for two completely different readers.
Right. The human reads the book to understand the strategy, and the human's AI reads the code repository to actually execute the analysis.
And honestly, this concept of collapsing changes how you view the entire corporate landscape once you grasp it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, think about when a brand goes through what the industry normally calls a rebranding. What they're really doing is forcing a recollapse.
A recollapse. That's such a cool way to phrase it.
Right. They're changing the underlying signals across the eight dimensions, hoping to force their observer cohorts to collapse all those new signals into a brand new perception.
But the actual work.
The real heavy lifting happens in the raw, messy specification of the business, not in the polished collapsed logo or the tagline.
Because you don't fix the underlying problems of a P&L by just erasing the final number and writing a bigger one in a nicer font.
Exactly. You fix the underlying transactions, you fix the specification.
So what is the point of a map if you can't use it to navigate? What can you, listening to this right now, actually do with these frameworks today?
Well, because this is an open architecture, you can literally test the physics yourself. There is an open source spectral brand theory audit prompt kit available online.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It allows anyone to run their own brand or even a competitor's brand through the eight dimensions using AI. You just supply the tool with the brand's materials, and the AI acts as the telescope, strictly guided by the mathematical map of the prompt kit.
That's incredible. What about the inside part?
Right. If you want to understand the internal operational side, you can go look at the Spectra Coffee repository.
The YAML files.
Yep. It is a public, forkable, and completely free example of what a machine-readable operation specification actually looks like.
Okay, I'm definitely going to have to check that out.
You should. It shows you exactly how to trace a customer experience goal all the way down to a bean sourcing requirement without losing any fidelity.
It basically makes the invisible structures of an organization visible and, more importantly, executable.
Exactly. And, you know, I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over.
Okay, lay it on us.
We have established that traditional books, brand health scores, and P&L statements are just lossy, collapsed versions of a much richer reality, right?
Right.
Now, apply that logic to your own resume or CV. Isn't your professional identity currently a collapsed, one-dimensional document?
Oh, wow. I never thought about it like that.
Yeah. A resume just shows the final $5 refund, so to speak. It doesn't show the complex problem-solving it took to get there. What would happen if instead of handing an employer a static resume, you published your own machine-readable activity specification for their AI screening agents to read?
An uncollapsed map of your actual capabilities.
Exactly.
Man, that completely reframes the entire concept of standing out in a labor market that's increasingly dominated by AI screeners.
Yeah. Yeah.
It shifts the whole game away from keyword optimization and moves it toward providing the full multidimensional specification of how your mind actually works.
It really does.
Well, if this sparked curiosity about what the framework itself actually contains, episode one is the full introduction to spectral brand theory. It takes about 15 minutes. And if you want the simpler version for people who have never heard of any of this at all, episode 25 is designed specifically for family and friends.